Hello and welcome once again to another episode of Curtain Call, where I spotlight the magic of theater one conversation at a time. And I'm your host, Tom Candela. Tonight, we're going to be stepping inside one of the most important artistic institutions in American theater. That's the New Dramatists, the Tony-honored Playwright Development Laboratory that for more than 75 years has helped nurture generations of writers who would go on to shape the American stage. Founded in 1949 by figures including Richard Rodgers, Oscar Hammerstein II, and Moss Hart, New Dramatists has supported artists such as August Wilson, Paula Vogel, Lynn Nottage, and David Lindsay Abaire, as well as Susan Laurie Parks, the first African-American woman to receive the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, who happens to be one of our guests today. This year's annual Spring Luncheon honors legendary composer and lyricist Stephen Schwartz, while also presenting the Konecki Award to Music Theater International for its extraordinary contribution to educational theater and arts accessibility worldwide. Joining me tonight are New Dramatists Artistic Director Emily Morse, playwright, educator, New Dramatists Board Member and Secretary of the Dramatists Guild Council Christopher Diaz, and Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, musician, and screenwriter Susan Laurie Parks. Then later on in the program, guess what? We're going to head to the red carpet together for a special edition of
The Roving Thespian,
where we'll hear from Stephen Schwartz himself, along with a couple of the other artists who gather to celebrate the mentorship and creativity in the future of American theater. So it's going to be a really fun conversation about what happens long before opening night, and why investing in artists may be the greatest performance of all. So set aside those playbills. You won't need them. The show begins right now. Joining me tonight, our New Dramatist Artistic Director, Emily Morse, playwright, educator, New Dramatist Board Member, and Secretary of the Dramatist Guild Council, Christopher Diaz, and, as I mentioned, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, musician, and screenwriter Susan Laurie Parks. Folks, welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Great.
You're having fun already. I love it. Well, Emily, I'm going to start this one with you. Mm-hmm. In today's theater landscape, where artists are frequently pressured to produce quickly and market themselves endlessly, how radical is it now to simply give writers time to write?
Well, I have an answer to that, and I'm sure Chris and Susan Laurie would also have answers to that. But I think it was radical when the organization was founded in 1949, and I think it remains so because these are resources, and time and space being among those resources, that they then use in service of their work. And so that idea that they are driving their own development, that they are following impulses, they are sitting within unknowns, that they have the agency over their creative process by using these resources feels very radical. And I think more so now, as some of the development opportunities that have existed in the past for playwrights have unfortunately dwindled or diminished completely, right. I think this time for generative work is their work. That is the work of the playwright, into which then they invite the rest of us to participate. So it feels pretty radical and necessary in our current landscape, but certainly in the landscape in which this organization was founded as well.
New Dramatists really does give the playwright the space to really develop their piece, and it does help sustain the future of American theater.
That's right. They're offered free self-guided seven-year residencies, and it's applied in service of plays. It's applied in service of process. Like, they get to really discover not just what they're making, but how they make it, mm-hmm. and with whom they need to make it. And that's, as an organization, we are responsive to the needs of each given sort of development iteration that they undertake in that time in the 7 years. So we really invite them to be the artistic directors of their 7 year residencies, and they can really explore deeply over time.
Wow. On that note, Christopher, you came to the New Dramatist as a young playwright yourself. How much guidance are you giving during that 7 years?
Yeah, it's interesting when we talk about writing and the space and the time to write. I would say that something like 50% of our time as writers is writing, is sitting by ourselves and writing. Yeah. And another 50% of our time is sitting in collaboration with other artists. If you're one of the differences between writing for the theater and writing poetry or novel is that your work is the first step of a larger conversation. Mm-hmm. And New Dramatist gives us all the opportunity to be part of a larger community. So you sit down next to, on one side of you, a writer who's brand new, who's just making their way in the world, and another writer who's been doing this for 10 years and has a Pulitzer or a Tony in their pocket. And so you get the collaboration and the community of those writers. And then what New Dramatist does as well, if not better than anybody else, is give you the opportunity to bring talented actors, directors, other kinds of collaborators into the space with you and help you ask the kind of questions that you need in order to figure out what your thing is. A lot of times we'll sit down in a New Dramatist workshop situation with just an idea. With, I wrote 3 pages last night. I don't know what this is going to be. I don't know if it's possible to exist on a stage, but I just want to play with it for a little bit. Uh-huh. New Dramatist does it, and very, very few other organizations do. Working with a theater company, even a not-for-profit theater company, their expectation someday is that this is going to be something that makes it to the stage and maybe makes a little money for us. New Dramatist, that's not the expectation. The expectation is we as artists are going to sit together, try to figure out what this thing is, and someday be able to execute the vision that we have in our head.
Are you actually, and I'll ask this of Susan Laurie, are you actually assigned at some point a mentor, or is it just open workshops and conversations that are ongoing throughout that 7 year process?
Yeah, now that's a great question, Tom. When I joined, I was looking toward people like August Wilson or Indazaki Shange or any of the number of amazing writers who had already been members.
Sure.
And but in my recollection, I was not assigned any mentor, the New Dramatist. The mentor that I was assigned was myself. It's so radical, Emily, what New Dramatist does, and Chris, right? Because it, especially these days, to give a person, an artist, freedom, what a word, mm-hmm. encouragement and support, and encourage that artist to follow their spirit.
Yeah.
Without, like Chris was saying, the hope is not you're going to go on and make a lot of money for our institution.
Right.
Is so deeply radical. And it is radical for an artist to listen to herself, to listen to himself, mm-hmm. listen to themselves. That is a very radical notion. Instead of listening to the call of the marketplace or the call mm-hmm. of some critics, what critics are saying, thumbs up, thumbs down these days, mm-hmm. to listen in, to listen to that small, still voice within, and to find that great, beautiful piece of writing that needs to be written.
Is it, Emily, any way in, and I think I read somewhere too, that the organization is part of the Kleban Awards. I was recently at the mm-hmm. induction of the two right. recipients this year. But there was a monetary aspect to that to help them get through the year, or 2 years.
Yes.
It's a 2-year monetary gift. Is there any monetary involvement to the writers who become part of the 7-year plan?
I want to answer that question. I want to just comment on a couple of things that Christopher was saying
sure.
and Susan Laurie
Absolutely.
Was expounding on. Once someone is in New Dramatist, they are a full playwright within a community of peers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's intergenerational engagement, not necessarily hierarchical. There is no status around who's in and who's has awards. It is a company of playwrights. And I do think mentorships develop, but they develop organically based on shared conversations.
Mm.
And so I think that's part of the rich dynamic of writers being those solitary creatures in many respects, but then having a community of writers around them who are doing what they do, but in their own way. Lucy Thurber once said, it's a bunch of lone wolves who like hanging out together.
Because, I like that.
You know, less lonely, but there's this idea that you're being witnessed, even if it's not programmed to be as such, right? There is a direct encouragement. There's also just the encouragement that comes from seeing other people striving to articulate that vision and that unearthing that voice that Susan Laurie was talking about on terms that they set for themselves. I think that's critically important, because that's, each person has their own individual path through New Dramatists, but they're doing it in the company of peer writers. So I think that I wanted to just share that.
Sure.
And then we administer the Kleban Ward Award on behalf of the Kleban Foundation. And that is a monetary award that New Dramatist members and alums can apply for. The remuneration that comes through the residencies is really for the work they do in rehearsal spaces. There is not a stipend or fee that they receive because they are a resident writer of New Dramatist, but there are resources available to pay them and their collaborators to come into workrooms. So whether it's for 4 hours or it's for 29 hours, we pay people for their time, including the playwrights. There's also resources to help offset travel and housing costs when we are a national organization. So when people come in from other places, Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon, Philly, Miami, Boston, wherever, we help offset those travel costs so that they can participate in this community of fellow writers and also make their work in New York City. And then we also provide childcare compensation when writers and their collaborators are working on, when they're in workshop sessions or working sessions, we're able to provide that. And that's thanks to the Howard Gilman Foundation, who provided a grant, what we call the Opportunity Fund, to help. Because the way the organization has evolved over time is that the needs change. The needs change in how they work in rooms together, who the collaborators are, and then also what are the economic circumstances that they're working in. So we've been able to help respond to that. It's a spirit of new. New Dramatist is a spirit as well as less so a status. It's more a spirit.
I think it's amazing that New Dramatist thinks of writers, the whole writer. I think it's brilliant, because a lot of those needs are needs that, I would just speak for myself personally, that I as a writer feel not so forthcoming. I'm a little slow. I'm a little shy about saying, like, I need childcare, or I need this and that, money for transportation. So that's really brilliant that you guys think of that and really empower us to think of that for ourselves.
As a young playwright, Christopher, when you entered New Dramatist, what fundamentally changed the way you thought about writing, if at all?
I'll tell you the story I always tell. I came in as a Van Leer Fellow, which is like a pre-membership in some ways, as a young writer of color. We have a meeting every year, twice a year, I believe, called the All Writers Meeting, where all the writers who are current members get to come in and learn the lay of the land, the city organization, and talk about what we're all doing. And my first meeting, as always, it's like walking into a lunchroom, you don't know where to sit. And I sit down, and I happen to sit down next to Sarah Ruhl, who had just won everything in the world for the Greenhouse. And I had done very, very little in my career, and I never will forget that whatever conversation we started having, she turned to me and she just said, what do you think about this?
Wow.
And I was an instant peer. And I had that conversation many, many times with writers. It's like from Lynn Nottage to Issa Davis to Lucy Thurber to whoever it might be. And you'll sit down and you'll look at the Tony Awards or you'll look at the Pulitzer finalists and you're like, oh yeah, I just had a potluck meal with this person at New Dramatist last year. So as a young writer, what I hope for the young writers who continue to come into our organization is that kind of instant feeling of, this is what I do. I do this seriously and fully and wholly with my whole humanity. And I'm part of a crew of a lot of other people who are doing it. And like Lucy says, yes, writing a play is lone wolf work, but making a play is not, and being in this community is not. So living this life is not lone wolf work. So that feeling of, I don't even know if it's acceptance, but this feeling of belonging, I think is exactly what New Dramatist does better than really anybody else.
Did you know who she was when you sat down next to her?
Absolutely.
Oh, you knew who she was? Okay.
I mean, she was at the height of her, well, she continues to be at the height of her powers. No, I knew exactly who it was. But writers are great. Like, writers almost uniformly are awesome people and tend to be interested in the other folks who are doing the same kind of thing.
Karen Hartman, now alum of New Dramatist, coined a phrase during her residency time that at New Dramatist, playwrights are the hosts, not the guests. And I think that's something that we can help cultivate. They host each other. They host their collaborators. They host their audiences. They host their conversations. So I really love that as a succinct way of articulating what Christopher was just describing.
Well, Emily, on that note, as emerging writers think about success, success might mean getting produced. But I think new dramatists, and correct me if I'm wrong, really redefine success in a deeper way. Is that correct? And if you can, expound on that.
That's a great question. I don't know that new dramatists imposes or even suggests any definition of success, because I think that's part of the work of the writer. And I think connected to what Susan Laurie is, and I have been talking about responsibility of the artist to take these resources and work with them in support of their writing and creative endeavors and mining their instincts and impulses. And I think that there can be a fluid definition of what success is based on what query they take into the room. It could be that they might say, I want to have a new draft of a play at the end of this time. Mm-hmm. And they might achieve that. And that is a success. It might be that in the course of that, they make this huge discovery that changes the course of their writing. And that's the success, because they learned something new about what they were doing. So I'm not trying to avoid the answer. I just think it's really fluid. And I think the writers define what that is based on the terms they set for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is the answer.
Yeah, okay.
It is the answer in a different way. They're not defining success by, as I said, being produced, but
correct.
By...
or awards or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
It's what it means to be an artist, a generative artist, a creative artist, a collaborative artist, like all those things.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that I had a feeling that I had made it, thinking about success, or I've had a feeling that I had made it when I made it through the door. My first experience with new dramatists wasn't as a writer. I was just hanging out in the theater scene where everybody used to hang out. And Intozaki Shange was doing a reading of her play, Three Views of Mount Fuji. And she was like, you want to be in it? Sure, I want to be in it. I said, what part am I going to play? She said, well, you'll play me. I said, oh, okay. So there we were. It was a staged reading. I can't remember if it was script in hand or not. It was like in the late 80s. And it was Intozaki was there, and Lori Carlos was directing. Sam Jackson was the main male character. Ruben Santiago Hudson was another one of the lead male characters. I was like, I've arrived. I'm a new dramatist as a performer. But then a couple of years later, of course, I said, I got to get in here as a writer, because my real thing is writing, of course. So, but it was that what Chris was talking about, when you're shoulder to shoulder with someone who you've been looking up to for several years, and you think, wow, I get to share space with this person. And they're regarding me as a peer, as one of their tribe, as one of their club.
Right.
It was a very beautiful experience, very welcoming. Like you said, it made me feel like I had made it. But yeah, in that moment, I felt like, wow, someone saw that I was worthy of bringing into the room.
One of the things I love about that story is that it is 100% right on. It's just the casual, we're just coming together, we're going to make this thing. And then you look back at it decades later, and it's like, oh, we just casually mentioned four of the most important artists in the history of the American theater.
In one sentence.
And not only just the writers, but the actors, the directors, a writer playing an acting role. It's just, it's that kind of place.
I want to say something else, because people who maybe don't know new dramatists, they're hearing about it, Tom, through your show, maybe for the first time. I believe that, like, what's the importance of theater, right? What's the importance of supporting a playwright, right? Especially if we're not, like, supporting them so that they'll make a gazillion dollars down the road. I believe that playwrights, theater makers, all of us are guardians of the galaxy. Theater is life. We're teaching each other and ourselves how to live according to maybe best practices, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're supporting. We're supporting like the most beautiful and vibrant things about world culture. We're supporting like the life itself. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe.
It sounds to me like you are literally cradled by an environment that allows you to grow and gives you the space to grow and gives you that confidence and enthusiasm.
You're encouraged to walk on your own and try things and fail better, like Beckett said, or be brilliant or be silly, all those things.
And in case you're just joining us today, folks, this is Curtain Call. I'm Tom Candela. And today we are featuring New Dramatist, a Tony Award-honored organization dedicated to developing playwrights and advancing the future of American theater. My guests are Emily Morse, Christopher Diaz, and Susan Laurie Parks. What do playwrights need, and this could be either one of you playwrights, a need that that the theater industry often fails to provide itself?
Oh, man, there's so many things.
is that a list?
We need a path towards health insurance. We need a rethinking of our classification, our labor classifications. I think what we tend to need in these spaces are more of these, first of all, the kind of perspective on our work that Susan Laurie just mentioned, that it is something larger than a purely capitalist endeavor. More importantly, this understanding of and respect for the thing that we're trying to do, which is crack a question or live in a problem and try to understand it in an embodied, holistic, multidimensional sort of way, the thing that theater then drama demands of a work. So I think New Dramatist is really leading the charge and creating that space. And then the other thing that is very specific to New Dramatist is actors, is really smart, well-trained actors who know how to help with this kind of stuff. And the New Dramatist acting community is really great. You bring in a new piece of work, she and a bunch of other artists help you dig into it, help you ask the questions that you need to understand what it is you're doing, get it up on its feet. So an extension of that community, not just writers, but all the different kinds of artists that it takes to help make a thing.
Yeah.
Well, I just add to the wonderful things that Chris has suggested. Also, our audiences. I would love to embrace our audiences more appropriately, more holistically, more thoroughly, and reignite or ignite their sense of adventure. So often people will only go to something if it's a hit or if it's a known thing. And my work is continually trying to find ways to encourage audiences at different price points, different kinds of theater, and just have the audience get that's something that a lot of us are doing.
Yeah, there's so many theater out there. It's not just going to a big Broadway show, but there's really incredible theater being done on the off-Broadway stages and off-Broadway throughout everywhere, really.
Yes.
And certainly
New York. Thanks for mentioning that, Tom. Yeah.
No, it's very important. Yeah, so if you're just joining us, folks, we have been talking with Emily Morse, Christopher Diaz, Susan Laurie Parks, all of the New Dramatists. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about this year's luncheon honoring Stephen Schwartz. Stick with us. There's much more to come.
Weekend of Chamber Music's 33rd season, My Brother's Keeper. 500 years of music born of compassion and the struggle for justice continues this week. Thursday evening, it's Music Talks, discussion and performance on Baroque instruments, Nutshell Hall, Lake Huntington. Friday evening, a free open rehearsal at Catskill Art Space. And the series concludes Saturday evening with an all-Baroque program on period instruments with the music of Bach, Bieber, and more. Info at wcmconcerts.org.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
Sign up for Radio Catskill's free weekly newsletter. Get the latest local news, culture, and things to do in your inbox every Friday. Stay connected and informed with Radio Catskill's newsletter. Subscribe at wjffradio.org.
All right, we are back speaking with Emily Morse, the artistic director for New Dramatist. Christopher Diaz, oh yes, who happens to be a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize for one of his plays, Chad Deity, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, amongst other things that he's done, Hell's Kitchen, 13 Tony Award nominations for that show when he collaborated with Alicia Keys on that. And of course, our other guest, Susan Laurie Parks, who is a Pulitzer Prize winner for her show, Top Dog Underdog. This year's luncheon, as I said, honors Stephen Schwartz. What is interesting, he's not being just recognized simply for his hit shows, of which there are many, and if I start them, people will recognize them. But for mentorship, again, we've been talking a lot about that, mentorship and stewardship of the field.
Yes.
Why was he the right artist to honor this year?
He arguably is the right artist any year, the longevity of his career. But I think this year with the Wicked Part 2 coming out. Mm-hmm. He had two shows going in New York, The Baker's Wife at CSC and Queen of Versailles on Broadway. It just felt like the right alignment of time and visibility, continuation of this extraordinary career. And I think with the values of New Dramatists to also include mentorship, which we hear over and over again how influential and supportive he has been to generations of other music theater makers. So just felt like the right alignment of all the things.
And for folks who don't recognize the name right away, certainly you did recognize the show Wicked, but there's also many, many others, Godspell, Pippin, Magic Show, Baker's Wife, Working, as well as some of the Disney-oriented productions like Prince of Egypt and Hunchback of Notre Dame. So many things that he has accomplished in his lifetime. So for younger writers, again, Christopher, what should they also be paying attention to about the way he has built his career?
Yeah, Pippin is one of those things I think every 16-year-old boy listens to and hear, who's into the musical theater world and listens to Corner of the Sky. And it's kind of like, yes, that's me. And that certainly was my experience. Godspell, another one that one of the first shows that I ever did in high school. So there's that. And then there's that other little show that he wrote called Wicked that is, you know, the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I've gotten to work with him quite a bit through the Dramatists Guild, the other Dramatists organization, where he is a former president and he continues to be one of the most significant presences on the board over there. And he, from the very, very beginning of his career, has felt an obligation, and I would venture to bet that he would call it a privilege, to be able to honor and support and take care of all other writers who are making this kind of work, this kind of dramatic work. It is a complicated, it's a complicated artistic practice. It's a complicated business field. And I think Stephen has really accepted the mantle of somebody who wants to make sure that everything is a little bit easier, everything is a little bit more respected in terms of this kind of profession, and that folks who are starting out and heading down this road are taken care of. I know one of his real passions is the idea of copyright protection, the idea of writers owning our copyright, which is different than in film and television. We get to have, every time there's a new production of our work, we get compensated for it. We have control over it. We get to have a voice and a say within it. And I know that those are the kinds of things that Stephen has really cared about. But the other thing I will say is similar to that story that I told earlier with Sarah Rule, Stephen has been generous in that same kind of way. If you are a dramatist, if you are at the table, if you are in the rehearsal room, he's interested in what you have to say about the thing that we're doing. And I couldn't speak more highly about him. The word that's been thrown around quite a bit has been mensch, and he's a mensch.
And a steward of the arts, right? Because there's a difference between mentorship and stewardship. And I think what you were just referring to a lot just now is the stewardship of steward. So he has spent decades literally teaching and mentoring young artists, both here and internationally. At what point do you think, Susan Laurie, does an artist like yourself or even a younger artist coming up start thinking not only just about their own work, but the future of the field itself and become that steward?
Oh, that's a great question, Tom. I think different, as we all know, different artists mentor and steward in different ways, just like different artists write different plays or screenplays. Mm-hmm. So what might look like stewardship to one artist might not be the kind of stewardship that another artist partakes in. I think, in my experience, stewardship begins immediately and mentorship begins immediately, even if you're not calling it that.
Okay.
For example, to work on a play that, let's say, is not mainstream and very few people understand, you're being a steward of the art form by saying, we're not just going to do stuff that's easily marketable. We're going to push the envelope. Right. And pushing the envelope is a form of stewardship because you're making sure that space will be made for the lifeblood of the art form, so you can say the arteries won't narrow too much in pursuit of just things that are marketable or just things that play on the wonderful world of Broadway. Mm-hmm. And then mentorship, the same thing. To work with an actor to find the beats in that drama, right? And then a couple years from that moment, seen the brother on Broadway in a leading role, Tony nominated, Daniel Watts, for example. You know what I mean? And you go, wow, by working together on this play, we all learn something about the craft of acting and the craft of the beauty of representation. So mentorship and stewardship come in all kinds of ways. I think artists, because in my opinion, art is a service industry, right?
Yeah.
I believe that the call to be an artist is fundamentally rooted in the call of service.
I would think, and that kind of, when you were saying that, it kind of, what popped into my head is I had read somewhere that you, Susan Laurie, had studied with James Baldwin.
Yes.
In creative writing.
Yes.
Yes. And,
yes.
And
yes, when I was in college, yeah.
Yeah. And so that stewardship or mentorship, was that something that helped encourage you to write for theater?
Totally. Yeah. Mr. Baldwin, I took a creative writing class with James Baldwin, and 15 of us in the room, 15 of us in the classroom, small class. And I was very, what do you call it, exuberant when I read my pages, which at that time I was only writing short stories, but I was very alive. He said after class one day, I know, he said, Miss Parks, have you ever thought about writing for the theater? And yo, I thought like, yo, brother's telling me that I'm not, you know,
I can't write short stories. Okay.
Exactly. Exactly. But his encouragement, and he wrote a beautiful evaluation of my work, and I have it framed on the wall of my workspace because it's so encouraging. But certainly the kind of love and encouragement he gave me as a writer and as a human being, maybe that's why I think it's connected from jump, because he gave me that kind of love very, very early on in my, I didn't even have a writing career, in my writing life.
Right. Now I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Emily, we're also honoring this year's Konecki Award. It goes to the Music Theater International. Tell us why MTI was the right recipient for this award this year.
Thanks, Tom. First of all, the Konecki Award is named for our beloved board president, Isabel Konecki, and her husband, renowned entertainment attorney, Ron Konecki. And this award recognizes those in the theater and entertainment industry who serve the field with passion, dedication, excellence, and leadership, which is really the spirit that Isabel and Ron carried with them in their professions. And MTI is an organization who has been serving our field for many, many years. I think it's also a licensor of Stephen Schwartz's work. So it felt like it was a synergy in a way between our luncheon honoree and then an organization that has some association with their work and also their commitment to education and building audiences for the future. So it felt like it was just the right synergetic choice for this year. Like while New Dramatists is helping to support the plays and the projects that are seeding the future of American theater, I think someone like MTI is also helping to cultivate the audiences of the future. So we're working in tandem. We all want the same thing,
right?
Which is a vital, vibrant, diverse, eclectic theater ecosystem. And they are a part of that.
So that kind of segues into the educational part of it, because both Christopher and Susan Laurie, you are educators as well. We learned a little bit from Susan Laurie about her experience with James Baldwin, of how an important moment in her life that was. Chris, how important do you find educational theater is for the future of the art form itself, teaching young artists?
Well, so many of us who are writers are also teachers for a lot of reasons, partially because the way that we get our health insurance among
others. Yeah, and then make a living. Yeah.
It's also incredibly rewarding. I've been teaching now, Susan Laurie and I both teach in the same program at NYU. We're in different sides of the virtual hallway. Mm-hmm. It's rewarding, like a really good class. It's an incredible feeling. So there's that to begin with. It also just keeps you in touch with what's going on in the world, what these young folks are interested in, what they care about. Things are better with the young people around in some ways. And I think those are the formative ways that we learn. It's by doing. This is a real learn by doing kind of thing. So you can sit down. Anybody can write a play. Anybody can sit down and write a play on their own. And it's not even so much about the hard skills of writing, I don't think. But there's so much more that goes into it. And so much about it is the soft skills, the friction of sitting next to an actor and an actor says something really smart and that finds its way into your script the next day. You learn that by doing and by being around it. And to see young people and the passion that they have for this was really fascinating. And it's a thin, permeable line between educational theater and theater, full stop. I think all education, mm-hmm. all theater is educational in some way. Hopefully, as Susan Lurie says, you know, it's rules for living, best practices for living. So we find these kinds of things, but I couldn't have more respect and more gratitude for the teaching artists who do this stuff every day.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Uh-huh. Yeah,
and I would say, Chris, we teach at NYU, and I also teach Watch Me Work. If anybody wants free creativity coaching, Watch Me Work online every Monday at 5.
But where do they find that before I forget?
Go to the Public Theater website. It's free. I've been doing it for 15 years. I'll talk to you about your work and your creative process.
Perfect.
They have a website, and you go on and you look for Watch Me Work, and you click, and they send you an invite, and you're in.
I think, too, that when you have working artists teaching, there's just their presence helps impart to students what is actually entailed and required of the artist who is also teaching you, right? The labor that's involved, the endeavor of it, the seriousness with which certainly Chris and Susan Lurie approach their work, that's really important. These are invitations that artists are making to engage with a society, with a culture. That's a very big responsibility. So their act of doing the thing that they're also teaching, I think, just is for young artists to have a really sober look at what is involved.
Yeah.
It can't be quantified, really, because they get that perspective from who they're in the room with.
So, Susan Lurie, you become the first African-American woman to receive the Pulitzer Prize for drama.
Yes.
For Top Dog, Underdog. So looking back at that now, what do you think that moment changed, not only for you personally, but for American theater as a whole?
Well, again, this is just my opinion. I'm sure it looks differently for other people, but people tell me that I kicked the door down.
Mm.
That's what people tell me. I'm like, well, okay, I was just writing a play. So it wasn't my intention to kick a door down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said often, and I still say, yes, it's awfully lovely being the first. I wish I had been the 41st. Yeah. People like Ntozake Shange, people like Lorraine Hansberry, people like Alice Childers, just to name the three off the top of my head, right? I feel like they were very deserving, equally deserving, more deserving.
Mm-hmm.
I'm extremely grateful to be honored in that manner. At the same time, I walk in the company, and I notice I don't say stand on the shoulders because I don't see it that way. I do not stand on the shoulders, but I endeavor to walk in the company of people like James Baldwin, people like Lorraine Hansberry, people like August Wilson, people like Alice Childress and Ntozake Shange, to just be in their company. And also, you know, people like Bertolt Brecht and Shakespeare and Chris Diaz. And I hope we walk in each other's company. I don't want to be standing on anybody.
That's beautiful.
It's only because in this country we don't have much respect for the ground on which we stand. And so I think those of us who are in this word creation of the world game, we can look at phrases like that. That's my soapbox.
That was great.
Let her cook. Let her cook. Let's go.
That was beautiful. That was a beautiful answer.
Let her cook.
Oh, I love that answer. Love it. Well, Christopher, your play, The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity, we briefly mentioned that earlier as being a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize in drama. In this play, you use professional wrestling as an interesting choice as a lens for race and identity. So what attracted you to using that as a form of theatrical language, if you will?
Oh, man. I grew up watching professional wrestling is the short answer, and I was obsessed with it, and I know it really well. I think you write something that you know, and it's interesting. It's fun to think about talking about this in relation in the company of Top Dog, because I was actually working at the Public Theater when Top Dog premiered at the Public and then moved to Broadway, and I was shaped fundamentally by it. And so much of that play is in the DNA of Deity without being on the surface of it, not to mention just Susan Lurie's love of language, which I think is a really significant part of what I tried to do with Deity. So, yeah, I think the wrestling for me is like the United States in that I'm very grateful to it for all the things that it's given to me in my life. And I also am 100% consumed by all the ways which is problematic and difficult and messy and not great. So I wanted to use one to explore the other, and it worked out really well for me.
Susan Lurie, 365 days, 365 plays. You did this project in 1 year. What was the inspiration for that, and truly, how did you do it?
The inspiration was an offer of gratitude. I'd just won the Pulitzer. I was very grateful and wanted to say thank you to theater. I had told one friend named Bonnie Metzger, who's a theater producer and a writer, I told her that I'm going to write a play a day. I'm going to call it 365 days, 365 plays. She said, okay. A year later, she calls me up and says, did you do it? Thinking that I would say,
no.
You know, but I said, yeah, I did it.
Wow.
She said, oh, wow, interesting. She said, where are they? Where'd you put them? I said, in the drawer. So she said, well, they need to be done. And so together we, and this is before the internet was a real strong thing, right? Cell phones were still relatively new. We ran around the world calling up our friends, for having them form theater companies that ran a whole year. And we traveled all over the world celebrating theater and connectivity and community. And yeah,
wow.
It was fun.
It's amazing. So you're sitting in a room for 365 days writing a play and knowing that your commitment to the task, what it, you open your eyes in the morning, what's your first thought on day, I don't know, 25?
Yeah, wow. Day 25, there might be someone outside going, give me my sweater, like that. You know,
okay.
And you go, there's the play. And you write a play called Give Me My Sweater.
Love it.
What you're doing is you're making a commitment to see and honor what is.
And amazing that you accomplished that. So kudos to you for getting through that. And Christopher, you wrote the book for Hell's Kitchen. Again, a big show, big Broadway show with Alicia Keys. So what was the biggest challenge in transforming that personal material into a dramatic structure and into a big show?
It was a dream project. And you get the head start of starting a musical knowing that you've got four or five of the best contemporary pop and R&B songs ever written, objectively. So that part was easy. The challenges in something like this are always establishing what it's going to be. What is a jukebox musical? What is a catalog musical, a canon musical? We wanted to do something a little bit different. And we wanted to tell a story about this young woman, this mixed-race woman growing up in New York City and the complicated relationship and / love story that you have with your mom in a situation like that. But we're super excited. It's been really well received on tour right now, and we are about to go to Korea.
Wow.
Our first international production of anything ever. So those kinds of challenges are super exciting, and hope that a lot more of them keep coming.
Why don't you give us your website, Christopher, for folks who want to look into more of what's going on? Where do they go to find that?
There is a website. It's ChristopherDiaz.com. It hasn't been updated in a very long time. But I can be found on Instagram.
Just so people understand, there's a different spelling to the first name, Christopher. That's K-R-I-S-T-O-F-F-E-R. And Diaz is the last name, so people can look up. And Susan Laurie, how about yourself?
Chris, I'm like you. My website, I have a SusanLaurieParks.com. I don't update it so much. I'm on IG as well. The Joyful Noise, which is my band. So maybe
we didn't even talk about your music career. That's right.
It's just a whole another life there. I'm living at the same time. But so, yeah, they can look up. I think it's LP365 on Instagram.
If you just search, folks, Susan Laurie Parks, that's SUZAN-LORIPARKS. We'll find lots of information about her, as I did. Emily, going to you, I want to ask now, this is a final question, the segment. Is one of the hidden gifts of new dramatists the permission to fail safely?
I would say succeed on their own terms. They take the risk to explore something new, whether it's a way of working or deviate from what they thought was the development path of a particular project. They are free to deviate, and sometimes they discover that left turn may have been wrong, but they might find something on that path that they can bring back and use in their play. So I think, and they're their first audience at New Dramatists. The playwrights are their first audience. So they're able to assess the work they want to do. And so, I think failure does come with that. Mm-hmm. But I say this a lot. I compare New Dramatists a little bit to a stage for a chef, right? It's a place where they can practice and hone skills and craft, experiment, discover along those lines. And if I watch Chef's Table, and then you often see that sometimes the chef's greatest triumph comes from a mistake that they made or a mistake that someone else made that
combines different flavors in a new way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what new dramatists is for playwrights, right? They can do all of those things, including combine ingredients that provide a new flavor going forward. So
that's great. And maybe the better question would have been permission to take risks safely as opposed to fail.
100%. Because
that's really what it allows, I think, artists to be able to do, to take risks all the time, knowing that there are those folks out there holding them up and backing treating them like you're good, you're okay, you're one of us.
Yeah, and people who say, I don't know where you're going, and I'm going to go with you. It's like Susan Laurie was saying, walking with. We are walking with them.
Very good. Christopher, to you, after all your awards and productions and shows, premieres, the recognitions you've received, what still makes you fall in love with theater?
Come to grips with the fact that I'm like actually addicted to it. Like I actually... to the doing of it, the writing of it, the creating, the trying to solve a problem, but the going to see it and experience it and be in a room. There's something about the act of participating in this weird art form that I need. Frankly, I think it's mostly about the community. I think mostly about the people that you do it with, that you watch with, that you make it with. I couldn't get away from that, I think, if I wanted to.
Great, great. I'm going to pose that question a little bit differently to you, Susan Laurie. When you're sitting in the theater as part of the audience, what brings you joy?
What brings me joy is when I feel like all the elements present, the writer, the actors, the design elements, the audience, the producing elements. It brings me joy when I feel that the event, audience included, of course, the event is singing the song. Like Chris was talking about, we're all in this environment together, and the song, we're singing the song. That thrills me.
That's great. Emily, back to you. I want to make sure that folks who are listening and they're wondering if how they become part of this family, what do they do?
That's a great question. There are a number of ways for people to get involved with New Dramatists. Certainly, they can visit our website and learn more about the history, which is an amazing history. There's internships. There's an annual application process to become a resident playwright for that seven-year program. We provide a fellowship for writers at the onset of their career through the Princess Grace Award, which we administer. So those are a number of ways. We have the annual admissions process, which the window would open usually early July and then closes mid-July.
Great. And that website is?
It is newdramatists.org, www.newdramatists.org.
Perfect. Perfect. I want to thank you all for taking the time out of your day today to be part of Curtain Call. It's Emily Morse,
thank you,
Christopher Dia, and Susan Laurie Parks. All right.
Thank you so much. I think devoting this time to talk about New Dramatists, which it does in many respects quiet, private work, but deeply influential. I just really appreciate this.
And I and the greater theater community really appreciate New Dramatists. My sincere thanks once again to Emily Morse, Christopher Diaz, and Susan Laurie Parks. As you've just heard, our conversation centered around the importance of mentorship and artistic community and creating opportunities for the next generation of playwrights and theater artists. Now, just a few days after recording the conversation itself, because I did it a while ago, to be honest with you, back in May it was. But I had the privilege a few days later of traveling to New York City for the annual New Dramatists Spring Luncheon honoring Stephen Schwartz and recognizing Musical Theater International with this year's Konecki Award. Now, before the luncheon began, I spent some time on the red carpet speaking with many of the playwrights and performers and theater professionals who had gathered for this celebration. One of the themes that surfaced again and again, and quite frankly, I questioned them with this again and again, about mentorship. Whether it was Stephen Schwartz himself or Pulitzer Prize finalist Samuel D. Hunter or Broadway performers Marla Mindell and Constantine Rizzoli, each spoke about the importance of experienced artists investing in the next generation. So let's step onto the red carpet in New York City, for it's time once again for another episode of
The Roving Thespian. Thespian. Thespian.
I stand corrected.
That's it. That's it.
That's a great validation for the show.
I'm Marla Mandel.
And you are?
Hey, Constantine Rasuli.
As young artists yourselves, how important is mentorship to the young artists today?
Well, it's such a small world, what we do for a living, musical theater. It's so insular, and so I feel like everyone knows everyone. And so we have to have guiding lights throughout our careers and our process. So I feel like if I had someone like Stephen growing up, I would be better for it because he's such an icon, and he's changed musical theater as we know it for good, one might say. Not to be cheesy, but it is true. Like, he's a pillar of musical theater.
And he just reinvents himself every single time. Yeah. And it's unbelievable to watch because you see the classics, of course, Godspell and Wicked and Baker's Wife, but like Pippin, of course. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it just keeps getting better and better and better. And you're like, how does one's brain do that? But yes, the mentorship of it all is to have somebody help you is beautiful. I was just telling Cheyenne Jackson about this. I was like, I looked up to you so much in my career and like comedy, and you are just like so funny and whatever. And it's just now full circle. We're very good friends and we work together in this business. So it's just,
it's so cool.
It's incredible.
So you mentioned some of the shows. Is there one particular song that either you really resonates of Stephen Schwartz's music?
Oh, I keep talking about Meadowlark. Yeah, I sang it in my talent show. I listened to it ever since I was like 8 years old. I know, and that must have been so obscure for an eight-year-old from Bucks County to be singing Meadowlark, but that's how meaningful it was to me. Yes.
Yeah, mine would be Godspell. I wore that album out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All of it. Like, Bless the Lord still to this day. Just
Shoshana Bean's Bless the Lord.
Shoshana's version of Bless the Lord when I was a kid.
Iconic.
Blew me out of the water.
Yeah. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Good to see you.
How are you?
Very good.
What's your full name?
Samuel D. Hunter.
And you are here for?
I wrote Little Bear Ridge Road, which was nominated for Best Play this year.
Wonderful. Congratulations on the nomination. So we're all here today to celebrate and honor Stephen Schwartz. If there is a one word that kind of sums up what his music means to you, what would that be?
It's hard to sum up in one word. I'm on the Dramatists Guild Council with Stephen, and so I've gotten to know him a lot over the years, and he's just such a great mentor and supporter of the arts and champion for writers. It's really meaningful to be here today for him.
I'm glad you brought up mentorship because that is very important. Certainly New Dramatists does that themselves. How important, though, is that for the young people, young artists like yourself coming up?
It's extremely important, especially now so many of the sort of developmental opportunities like New Dramatists have just disappeared in recent years. So without mentorship, we don't have a future for the theater. And without these developmental incubators and also just like mentors like Stephen, there is no theatrical future. So it's very, very important.
Becoming part of New Dramatists must be very important to become part of that family.
I was a New Dramatist from 2013 to 2020, and those are very formative years for me. And there's very few spaces where writers get to commiserate with each other, because I'm normally in a rehearsal room with actors and directors and designers, not other writers. And so just having a home base where we could all get together and talk openly. And writers don't have, as playwrights, we don't have a union. We don't have a collective force. So we need to be connected, and we need to be able to speak to each other.
So I want to thank you for stopping by. It's a pleasure to meet you.
All right, pleasure to meet you.
Thank you so much.
How are you?
Oh, Mr. Schwartz, so happy to meet you.
Thank you, you too.
You have been a mentor to many, many young artists throughout the decades. How important is that today for the young people to have a place like New Dramatist to come up through ranks?
Well, I think for those of us who care about theater and want theater to continue, you know, it's tougher out there than ever. And I think if those of us who've been around for a while can help some emerging talented writers and other theater makers avoid some pitfalls and find maybe a couple of shortcuts, that is a very valuable contribution. And then New Dramatists, they've been around a long time providing support and a home for writers in a very difficult environment. So that's why when I was asked if I would do an event like this in support of that organization, I said yes right away, because there aren't many organizations like that that are supporting and encouraging and giving a home to writers. And so if we want there to be theater, we need to be supporting new dramatists.
Well, thank you, Stephen, for your contribution. It's amazing. Thank you for your time.
And that was a lot of fun. So that brings me right back home now. Here in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, we're fortunate to have a vibrant and thriving performing arts community of our own, with talented artists and dedicated volunteers and organizations working every day to keep live theater alive and well. So here's a look at just some of the wonderful theater and performing arts events taking place throughout our region in the coming days and weeks. At the Forestburg Playhouse, Dear Evan Hansen continues through July 26th. And beginning on July 28th, it's the Broadway favorite Hairspray, and that show will run through August 9th. For tickets and additional information, visit fbplayhouse.org. Also opening on the 28th at Shadowland Stages, they are presenting Neil Simon's beloved comedy, Brighton Beach Memoirs, and that will continue through August 9th. For tickets and show information, visit shadowlandstages.org. Over in Damascus, Pennsylvania, my hometown, Farm Arts Collective presents Dream on the Farm No. 7. That opens July 30th and will continue to run through August the 9th. For tickets and showtime information and complete information on the other events happening at Farm Arts, you go to farmartscollective.org. Opening on July 31st at the Phoenicia Playhouse, they're presenting the musical Grease, and that show will continue through August 16th. For tickets and showtime information, go to PhoeniciaPlayhouse.com. Then on August 6th, the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center presents a special one-night-only performance of Being Somebody. Ticket and more information, you go to hpacny.org. And looking a little further ahead, Delaware Valley Opera Company continues its 40th anniversary season with Mozart's The Magic Flute. That will open on August the 15th. Tickets and complete information, you visit DelawareValleyOpera.org. And that's going to be it for tonight's edition of Curtain Call. My sincere thanks for spending part of your evening with me, and I hope you join me again next week as I continue to spotlight the people, productions, and stories that make performing arts such a vital part of our lives here in the Sullivan Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. As always, I'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments about tonight's performance or any of the shows, or suggestions perhaps of a future episode, or if you'd like to be a guest here on Curtain Call, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just send me an email at tom@wjffradio.org. So until next time, I'll say goodbye. This has been Curtain Call, and I'm your host, Tom Candela. Have a good night, and I'll see you at the theater.
Borscht Belt Fest 2026 is July 25th and 26th in Ellenville, a weekend featuring live comedy, culture, and food celebrating the golden era of the Catskills, featuring live performances, comedy, panels, and Q&As. And on Sunday only, the streets come alive with Hudson Valley vendors, live klezmer music, local artisans, and so much more. Borscht Belt Fest, July 25th and 26th in Ellenville. More at borschtbeltfest.org. Paid for by the Borscht Belt Museum.
This week on This American Life.
I just think we're opening a whole can of worms here that we don't want to be.
To better understand testosterone and its effects, I and the staff of the radio show get our testosterone levels checked to see who has the most.
For the men, I think it'll be a big deal. You'll know when you're talking to each other who beat you. I think it'll change everything.
This whole thing is going to lead to heartbreak.
Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local News, Culture, and NPR.